stand by. Good day, everyone, and welcome to the IBM StorageTalk SVC Architecture Overview Conference. Today's call is being recorded. And now for opening remarks and introductions, I'd like to turn the conference over to Bill Wiggin. Please go ahead.
Thank you, and good day, everyone, and welcome to this first in a series of five special sessions we're going to have on SVC. We're going to go ahead and get started on this. This particular session is an overview of the architecture, kind of for those who are new to the SVC, so we'll go over a lot of terms and help you understand how the SVC works. And then future series, we'll get into more specifics on 4.3 and flash copy and disaster recovery type solutions. So again, welcome, and let's go ahead and get started. If you have the presentation open, you're going to want to go through this in screen mode because there are some animation. And I'll just ask you to hit the Enter key, and we'll go to the next step in that animation. So right now, go ahead and go to the agenda. That's Chart 2. We're going to take a quick look at the current environment customers have today and what and how SVC can help try to address those problems. We'll look in depth at the SVC architecture, from how we do disk to clustering to copy services, data migration, help you understand I/O from the host to the SVC and from the SVC to the disk backend, and also share with you the SVC roadmap. So again, let's go ahead and continue on to Chart 3. This particular chart gives you an idea of what customers face today. These are the problems and limitations they have. They may have a heterogeneous environment where they have DS8000, EMC, maybe some DS5000, various products from various vendors in the SAN infrastructure with multiple hosts. So if you hit the Enter key, the problem we have today is there's a kind of a lock between the host and the disk that host is trying to access. And in this particular case, you can see that you have to have specific drivers at the host levels to make this work. So you need SDD for the DS8000, you need PowerPath for the EMC, you need RDAC for the DS4 and 5000 family. And so you're kind of locked into those particular servers. There's no good way to share that storage space as one giant pool of storage. You may see if you hit the Enter key now that the disks on the DS8000, they're filling up. But I've got plenty of space on the EMC, but I can't get to the EMC storage because I can't run SDD and PowerPath on the same HBA. So you get into contention issues at the host level. So that's a problem that customers have. If you hit the Enter key again, you'll see that I'd like to maybe migrate data off of the EMC onto some less expensive disk. And there's no good way to do that, let alone between the same vendor's products. EMC can't really do that even between their DMX and their Clarion, nor do we have any good way to do it between the DS8000 and the 4000, short of trying to use some kind of mirroring maybe at the host, but then you get into the issue of the multipath drivers. In this case, you would need PowerPath and RDAC on the same host, and that just doesn't work out well. If you hit the Enter key again, wouldn't it be nice to do remote copies between disparate subsystems or less expensive disk at your DR side, or flash copies onto Tier 2 or Tier 3 storage? These are all challenges that customers have, and they can't do today because they have to do all their copy services within the frame from that particular vendor. So again, these are the types of things that SVC is trying to help address. So if you hit the Enter key again, some of the other things that customers are challenged with, we've got different interfaces, element managers for all these different products. So we maybe have different administrators for each one, plus up at the SAN fabric level, we got another environment there that we have to manage. So wouldn't it be nice to be able to do all of that from a central console? And that's where you start seeing things like TPC as also an option to work with SVC to provide all this type of function and help streamline customers' environments. So let's take a look at how we would do that, how we would bring SVC in to help address these types of problems. So what is the SAN volume controller exactly? It is SAN-based, so we do need a SAN. It is an in-band virtualization product. I wouldn't let anybody be too concerned about that. All the virtualization products, even in Vista, in my view, is an in-band, even though they like to call it an out-of-band. We're not going to get into all the pros and cons of all those, but suffice to say, the SVC has been around now for 5 years. We've got over 4,500 clients, 50 petabytes of data managed, 13,000 nodes and growing. So it's proven technology. We virtualize many storage subsystems from EMC, Dell, HP, NetApp, Sun, Pillar, long list of supported storage, many customers doing this. We've also introduced thin provisioning in version 4.3. We'll talk a little bit about that. We'll get more into that in the next storage talk presentation coming up in another couple of weeks. We're going to take a look at, it also provides that ability to non-disruptively move data between storage subsystems. A big problem when customers have storage coming off lease, they want to be able to do that easily. That's a real pain for them now. And copy services, I can't do it between disparate subsystems. With SVC, I'll be able to do those. And this is a fast product. I mean, the Storage Performance Council, if you look out at that, has done the SPC benchmarks, and the SVC is one of the leads in that, those categories for the best performance. So lots of pluses to do in the SVC, many customers interested in it, so let's take a look at kind of how it works. Go to the next chart, chart 5. You'll see here is a traditional environment. We have a server attached to a RAID controller, and we present LUNs to it. In this particular case, if you hit the Enter key again, SVC, if you are now going to present the LUNs, instead of to the host directly, you're going to attach them or map them to the SVC. And the SVC will just see them as managed disks. So it's a one-to-one relationship between the LUN on the back end and the, what we call managed disk. If you hit the Enter key again, we then present what we call virtual disks to the host. These are just the LUNs that most people are used to from the disk back end. We call them virtual disks. They're basically just pointers, and the pointers then direct the I/O to the appropriate disks on the back end to get the data that the customer's application is requesting. So again, we present VDIS to the host just the same way as you would today. We map them to worldwide port numbers just like you would on a disk controller. So really the SVC just looks like a disk controller to the host. If you hit the Enter key again, we have this virtual to physical mapping that we talked about, the VDIS to the MDIS, and that's all contained within the SVC. And we, if you hit the Enter key again, we then typically take these managed disks from these different RAID controllers and we will group them into something called, we call managed disk groups. And the idea is we may have some high-performance disks, so we'll put our 15K high-performance fiber drives in there for our databases, et cetera. We may have some low-cost serial ATA or just lower-cost fiber, lower-speed, older disks that we may use for Tier 2 or Tier 3 that could be used for those applications that don't have demanding workloads or maybe use them for copy services targets for, say, like flash copy. So if you hit the Enter key again, since the SVC sits between the host and the storage, the host no longer sees the back end, all of the activities, all the copy services that we can provide within the SVC allow us then to do copies and moves and migrations and remote copies to disaster recovery sites to disparate disk subsystems. So we don't really care. We're doing all this at the VDisk level. So what the physical disks underneath are, it doesn't matter. We don't need copy services on them. We can do them at the SVC level, so you do it all in one place. Again, this helps streamline operations for customers, and they buy it once, so they don't have to worry about buying it for each disk subsystem. If you hit the Enter key, go to chart 6, we'll take a look at managed disks. Managed disks are, again, the LUNs that the disk controller presents to SVC. We call them managed disks. We really don't provide RAID function. In version 4.3, we do introduce VDisk mirroring. We'll talk about that in our next storage talk in more depth, but suffice to say it is not a RAID function, so you're going to want some kind of RAID-level protection at the disk subsystem, where, and then you present those LUNs to the SVC, and SVC will discover them as a one-to-one relationship. It has no idea what the RAID level is. It just sees them as a LUN, an amount of disk that it can use. We present those, map those particular LUNs to the SVC worldwide port number so that all the nodes see them. We then will be seen by SVC as unmanaged. We will then add them to managed disk groups, will be coming up on another chart, and then they'll be in a managed mode so we can actually start using them. And then image mode is a unique mode that is used when we want to bring existing data under the control of SVC, and we'll talk about that a little later in this presentation. This is, again, how the managed disk works. Again, we recommend some kind of RAID level, typically RAID 5, RAID 10, RAID 1, whatever is recommended for the particular applications for the performance requirements needed for that application. So if we go to the next chart, chart 7, we then take those managed disks and we group them together into managed disk groups. In this particular case, you're going to want to typically group them together in like performance. There's nothing to keep you from taking all the disk subsystems you have in your environment, putting them into one managed disk group. The thing is, as we stripe and build our virtual disk that we give the host, the performance could be unpredictable because some of the disk data could be on slower drives, some on faster drives, and so you typically don't want to do that. Nothing preventing you from doing that. You're going to want to group your storage into performance classes. Some people do it as their gold tier, their silver tier, and their bronze tier, or tier one, tier two, tier three, and then you can build virtual disks out of that pool of storage based on the performance characteristics required by the application. We do support up to 128 different managed disk groups with up to 128 managed disks in each one. We support 4,096 LUNs from 64 different back-end controller subsystems. And again, we talk to these or we address these managed disk groups in the form of extents. So when you start putting managed disks in a managed disk group, when you create the managed disk group, you will choose an extent size from 16 megabytes to 2 gigabytes, and this will determine how much you can physical storage you can virtualize. We typically recommend, you know, setting that to something other than 16 because that only allows you 64 terabytes of storage to virtualize. So most customers are these days doing at least 64, a lot of folks doing 128 or 256. It really doesn't impact performance, but you do want to set it so that you don't run out of extent addresses. So again, I would recommend something larger in the 128 to 256. Note also, you cannot migrate VDIS between MDIS groups with different extent sizes. However, in 4.3, we did introduce VDIS mirroring, which will let you do that, and we'll get into that again in a future presentation. But suffice to say, you're normally going to pick an extent size and use it for all your managed disk groups. We'll go to the next chart, chart 8. Once we create our managed disk groups, now we're going to create virtual disks that we're going to map to the servers for the applications to use to store their data. We build these from the extents. By default, we stripe across all the MDIS and the MDIS group. So in this particular example, you can see we're taking extents off of three MDIS in that MDIS group, and that's how we stripe across them all. That's the default behavior. You have choices of selecting just some MDIS in the MDIS group or one MDIS. You can create them in sequential mode, which would keep it as contiguous space on one MDIS, but the default is a striped across all the MDIS in the MDIS group and what most customers use. There are some other policies that you can do, such as VDIS mirroring and space-efficient VDIS in 4.3, and again, we'll talk about that in a future session. If you look at the number of VDIS that we support in 4.3, we also introduced we increased that, basically doubled per IO group, the number of VDIS to 2,048. These VDIS can be dynamically expanded, so you can now, with things like AIX and Windows, you can grow an existing VDisk that a host sees as opposed to adding additional VDisk. So if you have an HDisk in AIX, you can actually grow that HDisk from 100 gig to 200 gig if you wanted to do that versus creating a second VDisk that would be a second HDisk. We also allow you to control or limit the number of IOs or megabytes per second per VDisk. So that is another thing that you can do to govern the workload. That's a trait you can configure on a per VDisk basis. If we go to the next chart, chart 9, you'll see here's the different modes that we have. We talked about image mode. This is when you bring an existing LUN under the SVC to virtualize it. And again, we'll talk in more depth about that. The other modes that you normally would create new VDIS in would either be sequential, which in this example shows you it's contiguous space in MDG2. But the default is striped, and what most folks do, it would be this type of VDIS. And as you can see, in the example, it's striped across two MDIS in MDIS group 3. Okay, if we go to the next chart, chart 10, once we've created a virtual disk, now we have to map it to a host. And in this case, we also assign it to what we call an IO group. When you buy SVC nodes, you always buy them in pair, and a pair is called an IO group. So we assign it to an IO group to say this is where we're going to mirror the writes from that host, so all I/O go from that host will go to, or at least all the I/O for a particular VDIS will go to one I/O group, and will mirror the writes between the nodes in that I/O group, so that if one node fails, the other node continues on processing the I/Os from that host for that particular VDIS. As far as mapping it to a host, we do the same thing that you do on a disk controller today. We would map those VDISCs to the worldwide port numbers of the host, those HBAs in those servers. Okay, we do use typically STD. It's free. We provide it. We do support other multipath drivers, as noted out on the SVC support matrices, so you can check that out. And I have links to that at the end of this presentation. And again, we can group up to as many HBAs as you want to put into a server, but we do have limits on the number of paths to a particular VDISC, and that limit is 8 in the SVC. So we'll get into more depth on that in some future presentations on best practices and things of that nature. So if we go to the next chart, chart 11, if you take a look at this picture, we have our host at the top. We have four I/O groups, 8 nodes in this environment. The I/O group is what's circled in the black circle there. The cluster, the SVC cluster, is the white circle. And when we talk about a cluster, it's all the nodes in the cluster, whether it's 2, 4, 6, or 8. When we talk about an I/O group, it's always 2 nodes. If you hit the Enter key, you'll see that each node is an X Series E server. It's got 8 gig of cache on each node, and we mirror between those 2 nodes. So a VDISC is owned by an I/O group, by that node pair in this example, and these would be mapped to various hosts, and that's where we would do the mirror cache for writes, so that if one node failed, the other node would continue. But the entire environment in the white circle is what we call a cluster. If you hit Enter again, you'll see that the virtual disks are shared between a pair of nodes. We talked about that already. And you can see that if you hit the Enter key again, we have a pool of managed disks. That's all the disks along the bottom are all a cluster resource. We build virtual disks on those managed disks, and then the only thing that is really kind of tied to an I/O group is the virtual disk is going to be to one of those I/O groups. But all the managed disks are available to the entire cluster. If you go to the next chart, chart 12, clustering again is 2 to 8 nodes. One node automatically is designated as the configuration node. This is the node that you would talk to using the master console or using the command line interface. So, again, we treat the cluster as a single entity. It has one IP address. The IP address is owned by the configuration node, so that's the one you talk to do administration. If that node would have a problem or fail, then one of the other nodes in the cluster would take over. There's a lot of autonomic type features in the SVC to try to restart a node and bring it back into the cluster as possible to, again, kind of make the product a little more self-healing than having to require a lot of customer intervention. If a node does fail, the node does go into cache write-through mode until that node is repaired and brought back online. Then we'll go back into where we mirror write cache. It's just like a disk controller. If you think of a two-node cluster, or two nodes in the I/O group, it behaves very much like a DS8000 or DS4000 would today between the two controllers and those kind of boxes. We do have 4K byte segments, so we efficiently use the cache. We do have a UPS on every node, and that is required. You can't get away from the UPS. It's there to do battery backup for the cache in memory on the nodes. Isn't really designed to keep the nodes up for an extended period of time. STD, again, we talked about that as a multipath driver, although we support other ones. And as part of the clustering of the SVC, we do have something called quorum disks. Normally, you don't have to worry about these too much. SVC takes care of it for you. But these quorum disks, there are 3 of them, three quorum disk candidates. We just steal about 300 megabytes of space off the first 3 M disks that you provide to the SVC from the disk back end. And then we use one of those as the active quorum disk. And SVC pretty much manages that, but you can set which disks you want to have the quorum on. And there are some reasons to do that that are beyond this presentation. But suffice it to say, there is a quorum disk. It's used as a tiebreaker in the event you had a two-node cluster and both nodes failed to be able to talk to each other, but they could both get to the disk. The idea is whoever can get to the quorum disk survives, the other node shuts down. This is to prevent basically what they call a split brain situation where both nodes in the I/O group might try to do I/O to the same disk, which would be a bad thing if they're not able to communicate with each other. So that's the purpose of the quorum disk. So let's go ahead and go to the next chart, chart 13. Power loss. Write cache, we have to do whatever we can to preserve that VDIS to MDIS mapping tables. That's very crucial data. Without that, the data on the disk back end is pretty much useless. We provide a UPS to provide protection for that. We assume that in the event of a power loss in the data center, if the UPS senses its power is gone, it will go into a shutdown mode to bring the nodes down gracefully. We assume also that the disk subsystems are also shutting down if there's been a power outage in the data center. So we can't destage things from our cache to the disk back end. So we actually take and write all the information that's in the cache on an SBC node to the internal hard drive on that node so that we protect that cache and that data. And then when the cluster is restored and brought back up, that data gets repopulated into the cache so we can continue processing without losing any data. We do make sure that the nodes are connected to different UPSs so you can't share them. It is a cluster, so we have cluster-wide error logs. We have cluster-wide SNMP traps that can alert the customer and IBM if there are any problems. We have call home capability, just like all of our other disk subsystems, as part of the SVC. And again, you can even send email notifications to multiple administrators in the environment that there's something wrong, as well as SNMP traps to, say, a help desk, centralized help desk that could also be notified that there's some kind of a problem. We go to the next chart, chart 14, maintenance. Question comes up, well, okay, there's really no redundant parts within a specific node. There's only one hard drive in a node. What happens if a hard disk fails? Okay, at that particular time, if a hard disk fails, that node is going to basically crash, right? The other node in the I.O. group will continue on with I.O. Call home will be invoked. IBM will be notified that one of the nodes is down with an error code that indicates that the hard drive has failed. The CE will be notified and dispatched to bring a hard drive out to repair that node. When they come out, they take the system of that particular node apart, replace the hard drive, plug it all back in, power it back up, and you might ask, well, who loads the Linux kernel, the SVC code, and the configuration? That's all done automatically by the SVC. You don't have to do anything special or know anything about Linux to load it or do anything. The SVC nodes, if you'll notice, don't even have a CD-ROM or a diskette drive in them. They're very appliance-like. So the CE will do a button combination on the front panel that will tell the box to flash boot. It'll be asked for anybody on the SAN that could help it load its code. The SVC cluster will say, oh, we know who you are. Here's your code. Here's what you were doing. Here's all the VDIS that you were managing, and brings it back into the cluster again. The customer, nobody has to do any kind of restoration to do that. We also provide concurrent software and hardware maintenance, so you can actually replace the hardware nodes non-disruptively when new hardware comes out. I had many customers upgrading to the new 8G4 models from the old 4F2s, and that's gone very well. They can do that non-disruptively, as well as we can do software upgrades of the cluster non-disruptively. If we go to the next chart, chart 15, here's just kind of a picture of the hardware. Gives you an idea of the nodes. They're always sold in two nodes, two UPSs. The whole idea is to try to make it as simple as possible. SVC is software, but we include the hardware to go with it to minimize complexity, make it more like an appliance. And it also makes it easy to scale. If I want to double basically the performance capacity of the cluster, I just add another node pair. And so it scales linearly as you do that up to eight nodes. The detail of what the nodes are is all there on the left. I won't go into all that, but suffice it to say that the redundancy is built into the nodes, one node failing over for the other node. There are no redundant parts within an individual node. They're basically the X series boxes. The only difference is the front panel is unique. That's part of what we call the Endeavor module within IBM world. It does a lot of the control for how to for some of the clustering and for interacting with the cluster through the front panel. So again, that's the only real modification. Otherwise, it is a standard X series box. If we go to the next chart, chart 16, we'll take a look. It's also a common platform then for all the copy services. We won't go into great depth here, but do want to let you know that we do provide asynchronous and synchronous. That's global mirror and metro mirror functions. We do include we do provide the option for flash copy and also data migration. Now, the first three are additional charge feature codes that you would have to purchase on a per terabyte basis. The data migration function is actually built into the base SVC virtualization code. So So we're going to take a look at these now. So if you go to the next chart, chart 17, again, this is an animated chart. You'll see that we have an SVC cluster remote copy between two locations. This could be MetroMir or GlobalMir. And if you hit the Enter key, you'll see that we can actually mirror the VDIS from site A to site B, and those RAID controllers could all be from different vendors. Again, we're doing this as a VDIS level, so now the customer doesn't have to go buy GlobalMir or MetroMir type function in each disk subsystem. They would do it within the SVC, and now I can go between dissimilar systems. It doesn't matter because I'm doing it at the VDisk level. If you hit the Enter key again, it should be a chart 18. You'll see that we do the source volume may be spread across multiple disk subsystems. The target can be too. They can be from different vendors. That's the key differentiator for SVC. We also support long distance extenders and all the different things. SVC is really not aware of those, so we can use any of the standard routers or long-wave DWDM-type solutions. It is a one-to-one relationship only, so your primary and secondary VDIS, they do have to be the exact same size, and it could just be one-to-one. Currently, we only support what we call one partnership from one SVC cluster to another SVC cluster. We don't allow three-site or multi-site clustering today. That's a futures for 2009. We'll talk about that later. We do support suspend and resume, meaning if you lose communications between the two sites, when we restart the communications, all we send over the changed tracks, the changed data from the primary to the secondary site. And we also support failover failback, so that you declare a disaster, you go to the DR site, you start doing your operations there, and then you want to move back. Assuming your data is still okay at your primary site, we've been keeping track of just the changes, so now we can copy back only the changes back to the primary and then move our data center back to our primary location. So again, we provide those type of functions. Consistency groups, up to 256 to kind of categorize your different applications together. You can do all this through the web browser, CLI or scripts, or you can even look at something called TPC for replication to help with this as well. The key thing about the copy services on the SVC is they're licensed. They are licensed independently. There is a charge for them, but they're based on the number of terabytes that you need to do. Many subsystems require you to buy remote copy or flash copy for the entire box. So if you've got a 50-terabyte box, you've got to buy 50 terabytes of the copy services, even if you're only going to flash 1 terabyte. SVC lets you buy it 1 terabyte at a time, just what you need. Okay, if we go to the next chart, chart 19, take a look at flash copy. And in this case, flash copy is just within a cluster. As we noted before, the remote copy is between two clusters, as this picture shows. Flash copy would be just within one particular cluster. So, for example, the cluster on the left. If you hit the Enter key, you'll see again, we're on chart 20. We're going to see that you do have two locations. If you hit the Enter key, you'll see that SAN flash copy is outside the box. We can do between dissimilar subsystems. So you could have the source on fiber channel high performance, and you could have the flash copy target on low-cost serial ATA if you wanted to. But you cannot flash copy across SVC clusters. That's just within the SVC cluster itself. If you hit the Enter key again, we do have cross-device consistency groups. And if you hit the Enter key again, you'll see that we can take volumes from multiple subsystems and group them together and flash them all together to a whole different disk subsystem. Again, all done at the VDIS level. We don't care about what the underlying disk storage subsystem is. So again, this gives the customer lots of flexibility to buy the storage at the level they need and provide the copy services at the SVC level. Get the Enter key, chart 22, again, flash copy overview. We have increased the number of flash copy targets that you can have up to 256 now in version 4.3. This allows you to take many, many points in times copies to be able to restore back to specific points in times if you wanted to, almost a CDP-like capability. We now license the software for flash copy just on the source. So if you wanted to make 256 copies of a 10-terabyte database, you'd only have to buy 10 terabytes of flash copy license. Previously, you would have had to buy 10 times 257 copies, basically. So we've changed that licensing since we have so many copy options just based on the source. The copy, just like DS8000 or anything else you may be familiar with, flash copy is very similar. The copy is immediately available. It can be updated independently, so you can mount that target to another host and do read writes to it. And you can control the copy rate. We have flash copy, no copy, which says just only the changed tracks from the source. When we do a copy on write to preserve that point in time, we copy that chunk of data over to the target. Or if you want a full volume copy or a clone, you can also change it to the copy rate dynamically to say, now I want to copy all the data from the source to the target. We support many consistency groups. We support up to 4,096 flash copy relationships in 4.3. And again, you can invoke all this through the GUI, through CLI or scripts, or through TPCR. And this also is licensed independently, so you buy just the terabytes that you need to flash for the source data that you need to make copies of. We go to the next chart, chart 23. Again, now we'll take a look at data migration. Again, this is part of the SVC base code, so you don't have to pay anything extra for this function. The first three were optional feature codes. If we go to the next chart, chart 24, these are some of the migration capabilities within the SVC. I'm able to take image mode, which we'll talk about a little bit more, but again, this is where you would bring volumes that already have data on them that customers are using, bring them under SVC control and virtualize them. So we can take them as image mode, bring them under SVC that way. Then we can migrate them to the native, if you will, stripe mode, where we have the VDIS striped across many MDIS. And if you wanted to, you could put them back to image mode if the customer decided to take the SVC out or take this particular application out from SVC control for some reason. So it also is a great way to let them do a try and buy. They can bring it in, virtualize it, and if they decide they don't want to do that, then they can put them back the way they were and take them out of SVC. We also allow existing VDIS from striped or sequential to image mode. We go image to image mode. Some people have used SVC just for migration between disk subsystems, although typically once they see what they can do, they want to keep it there, and that's really what we're targeting the product for. And again, it gives you many migration capabilities, and again, allows customers to try it and back out if they so desire. You go to the next chart, chart 25. Here's just an example again. It's pictures. Here's a stripe. Number one is a stripe VDIS. You can see extents taken from three MDIS. We have sequential VDIS. Number two, that's a contiguous space on one MDIS. And then image mode is a one-to-one relationship with the LUN on the disk back end. And this is, again, used for the situation where we have data already existing on a disk subsystem that we want to bring under SVC control. So let's take a look at how we do that. Go to the next chart, chart 26. Here's your environment. You have three servers, four different disk arrays, and the subsystems are all getting their disks from different environments. And now we want to virtualize it, bring it under SVC control. So we're going to stop the host IOs to the LUNs that we're going to migrate to the SVC. If you hit the Enter key, you'll see the little hands come up. We're going to pause IO on those guys. We're then going to introduce the SVC, and we're going to take those LUNs that the host was seeing. We're going to map them to the SVC. We're going to then create image mode VDIS on those. So it'll be a one-to-one relationship. They'll just basically, the host will be passing through the SVC to access their disk. They won't see the disk anymore on the back end. They'll see the SVC. They'll see them as VDIS. They'll see the same signature, the same PVIDs, that type of information. The host will recognize the volumes, be able to bring up the applications again, and now it's going through the SVC. I can do all the copy services on image mode VDIS, so if I wanted to leave them in that mode, I could still then start using the SVC copy services on those if I so desired. But let's go ahead and continue with the migration. If you hit the Enter key again, we've reassigned those image mode VDIS from the SVC to the host. The applications get restarted. We didn't move any data. Everything's still where it was. And we can then, if you hit the Enter key again, we can now move that data onto some new storage. That's typically what happens. Customers buy some new storage along with SVC because their lease is maybe coming up, and now I can move off of the existing storage onto the new storage as part of the entire migration process. Again, now that I'm under the SVC, I can move the data from disk subsystem to disk subsystem without the applications even knowing, so there's no downtime to do that. Storage administrators love it because they don't have to get the host people involved because there's no need for them to have to do anything at the host level. They won't even know that the storage is physically being moved. If you hit the Enter key again, now we can do the same thing to other hosts, to other storage subsystems, and we can virtualize server by server until we have our entire environment virtualized under the SVC, at which point in time, as I mentioned, any future changes are non-disruptive to the environment. I can bring storage in and take storage out unbeknownst to the host. If we go to the next chart, chart 27, so again, we'll just take a quick look at some pictures that might help this explain it. If you take a look here, we have an image mode VDIS. This is what the host sees, so we've mapped it to the server. The server sees the PBIDs and the window signature. Everything is a one-to-one relationship here. It happens to be an image mode VDIS from an EMC that we've brought under SVC, presented back to the host. We put it into, I just called it an image mode managed disk group, and it's a one-to-one relationship between the VDISC and the MDISC. If you hit the Enter key now, we have I.O. going on to that particular image mode VDISC, but now under the covers, we've decided to move the data, the physical data, from that EMC LUN to a bunch of different MDIS in an MDIS group that's on another disk subsystem that SVC supports. Could be an IBM, Hitachi, another EMC. But if you look at the VDIS, nothing's changed other than the mode has changed from image mode to stripe mode, because now its extents are distributed across multiple MDIS in the MDIS group. So now I've basically brought it under SVC. I've moved the data behind the scenes, and the host has no idea because he still sees the virtual disk and nothing's changed in his view. If you hit the Enter key again, if the customer decided he wanted to move it back to image mode and take it out from under SVC control, that's perfectly allowable, and SVC allows you to do that. So you can migrate again, all again, while the host is doing I.O. to the VDISC. Now you would have to take an outage to reverse the process and take the VDISC and the MDISC, if you will, out from under SVC control and present it back to the server outside of SVC. Again, you can do these type of migrations unbeknownst to the host, and that is a key feature that customers really love about the SAN volume controller. Hit the Enter key, go to chart 30. Again, hopefully a customer is going to keep the SVC in there because they love it. They're going to be able to do things such as this. I may have some new disk arrays that I put inside my disk subsystem, and I maybe want to move some applications off of these 73-gig drives, and I want to move them to a managed disk group where I've got some 300-gig drives, and maybe they're just doing a little archiving of that data, or it's not used as much, so I want to get them off my high-performance drives and move them on to some larger, slower-type drives as a possibility. I can migrate a VDISC from one managed disk group to another managed disk group. Again, the host I.O. continues on as normal, and I can do this really any time during the day to move that data between the two different types of disk spindles. And again, the application has no idea that's going on because all he sees is the virtual disk, and the virtual disk is really just a set of pointers. You hit the Enter key again. It's a great solution, the SVC is, for customers who just are constantly battling, okay, I got a disk subsystem coming off lease, now I got to coordinate all kinds of activities to try to move the data from that old system onto the new system. With the SAN volume controller, this is a piece of cake. They basically just kick off migrations from one managed disk group to another managed disk group, the new managed disk group being a new disk subsystem that they're bringing in to replace the one coming off lease. Once I've moved everything off of the old subsystem, I just remove it from the SVC, pack it up, and ship it home. All the data is now on the new subsystem, and the host had no idea that we just did that. So again, if we go to chart 32, we've been talking a lot about migrating VDIS between managed disk groups, but you can also migrate individual extents from different MDIS in the same MDIS group. So that's another function of the migration capability that we can do that. So in this particular example, we wanted to maybe remove one MDIS from the MDIS group. Assuming there's enough space on the other MDIS, we can do that, and SVC will restripe all the extents on that disk we're getting rid of onto the other MDIS in that MDIS group. We can also add MDIS to an MDIS group. There is not a function in SVC currently to redistribute all the extents evenly across all those MDIS in that MDIS group, but we do provide, and at the end of this presentation, is a link to a script that will let you do that. And it'll basically, if you had 10 MDIS in the MDIS group and you wanted to add 5 more to that MDIS group, you could run this script, and using the single extent migration function that's in the SVC, it will distribute the extents evenly across all of the 15 MDIS now in that MDIS group. If we go to the next chart, chart 33, let's take a look at and make sure we understand how we move, how data flows between the host, the SVC, and the SVC backend. So here's an example. Your HBA ports on the SVC are all plugged into the SAN, two from each node into each fabric, as would be your storage subsystems here, a DS product or and an EMC. And then your hosts typically have two HBAs, one to each fabric. The SVC ports act as both host initiators and targets. So in the case of the host, they look like SCSI targets. That would be the VDIS that they're trying to. But the ports also act as initiators to drive I/O to the disk back end to get data in response to those requests from the host. So we're going to take a look first at the host SVC I/O. So if we go to the next chart, chart 34, you'll see that we have in an I/O group two nodes, and we have what we call a preferred node and an alternate node. In the SVC, we have the concept that a VDisk is owned by one of the nodes in the I/O group. Even though both nodes can service the I/O, if you use an SDD multipath driver, one node is the preferred node, and so I/O will be driven to that one. There's some efficiencies in the way caching and things work if we do this. If you're familiar with the DS4000, it's kind of somewhat similar to the affinity that you have with a LUN to a controller in the DS4000, but not quite as restrictive. So in this particular case, an I/O is going to come in to that VDisk. It's going to go to the SVC node 1. It'll get mirrored to the other node in that I/O group so that we have the data in two locations in case one node would fail. We want to make sure that we have that data because we're acknowledging back after we write it to the cache in both nodes that the write is complete to the application. Then sometime later, we actually destage step 3 to the disk back end. If you go to the next chart, chart 35, if we lose a node, we start using the alternate node. The multipath drivers at the host will start using the other node to, or the other paths to the other node. We'll go into cache write-through mode because no longer do we have a way to be able to mirror the cache, so we're going to write, all writes will go to the cache on the disk back end before we acknowledge the application that the write's complete. This will go on until node 1 is restored and brought back into the cluster. So we hit the enter key. Here's another example of some zoning. We have an AIX host with two HBAs. We have two SVC nodes configured to two different fabrics as well. And in this particular case, the preferred path for this VDisk 1 are going to be those blue lines, and the alternate paths are the dotted green lines. Just to give you an idea, that's VDisk 1. Now we create, if you go to chart 37, a second VDisk. By default, SVC would kind of tend to make that the other node in the I/O group. He round robins them. You have choices over that, but by default he round robins. So now the I/Os would go over the blue lines here to the second node for this VDisk because the preferred node for it is SVC 2. So if you take a look at chart 38 and you do a data path query device, this is an SDD command, you'd be able to see that on disk 1 there's four paths, but only two of them. Under the select column, you'll see that in the select column for disk 1, you'll see 112 and 116. Those are the kind of give me a number idea of IOs that are going on. It's only using the paths to the preferred node. And then if you look at disk 2, you'll see that it's using the other two paths of the four paths it has available. So that's how it drives I/O to the preferred path. If one of the nodes would fail, you would see then it would start using those other paths that are available to it. But that's just the way SDD works, tries to honor the preferred node for a particular VDisk. If we go to the next chart, chart 39, now let's take a quick look at the SVC to disk controller, how it works. So this is the below the dotted blue line. Again, if we go to the next chart, chart 39, there is no multipathing per se in the SVC itself. The SVC is going to look like a host to the DS8000, to the DS4000, to an EMC, to an Hitachi. We don't load SDD and PowerPath and multipath drivers from other vendors to talk to their disk subsystems. We do that all through the SVC code that's written to handle that. We use the standard SCSI interfaces to do those types of things. So you don't have to buy any of those things. That's the whole idea of SVC, is to save customers money on those because those multipath drivers are expensive, and SVC to the back end handles it within the code itself. There are some requirements. All the SVC nodes in the cluster must see all of the LUNs on the disk controller. So when you map LUNs from the back end controller, all the nodes in the SVC cluster have to see them. Again, remember MDIS, the LUNs, are a cluster resource, so all the nodes have to see them. Also, all the SVC ports that are zoned with the controller ports must see the same LUNs. So normally what you're going to do is you're going to take all the ports on the SVC nodes that are in Fabric 1, zone them with all the storage ports in Fabric 1, and do the same for Fabric 2. That way, all the SVC ports see all the storage ports and vice versa. And then when you present LUNs to the SVC, you'll map those LUNs to all the worldwide port numbers of all the nodes in the cluster. That's the recommended way to do things. If you don't do this, you're going to get notified by the SVC that something's degraded because something's not configured properly that's violating its rules of what it needs to function correctly. So you go to the next chart, chart 41. Here's another example. SVC doesn't really load balance across the different paths and the different ports to all the different LUNs on the back end. So as an example here, we have a DS8000. It has 6 fiber channel ports, and it's a 4-node cluster. We've got 16 8-packs, each configured as one big LUN. So SVC is going to discover 16 LUNs or 16 MDIS. Typically, they may be numbered in MDIS 1 to 16. This is just an example. And what's going to happen is SVC is, and the nodes are going to agree to talk to a specific set of LUNs over a specific port on that DS8000. So as an example, on DS8000 port 1, we may talk to 1, 7, and 13, and you'll see so on and so forth to the other 5 ports. You'll notice we have an odd number. We don't have a divisible number of LUNs by the number of ports, so we're going to talk to 3 LUNs on ports 1 through 4, and we're going to talk to 2 LUNs on ports 5 and 6. If you add additional LUNs in the future, then ports 5 and 6 would each pick up another LUN. Again, trying to balance the number of LUNs that SVC talks to over a given port on that disk subsystem. And all the SVC nodes talk to those LUNs over that port. And it doesn't change unless, for some reason, a path or a port would fail. Then SVC will redistribute things automatically. If you go to the next chart, chart 42, this is just kind of a summary chart that a gentleman I work with had created, and then I just added a bunch of things to it to kind of say, here's one chart with a summary of everything on sort of best practices for host zoning on the left, how to physically cable things, the SVC cluster zoning, the storage zoning. So, again, this nothing else. You may want to just hold on to this chart for some ideas on the best way to set things up in kind of a summary chart. We go to the next chart, chart 43. Let's just take a look quickly at what does SVC support these days. With version 4.3 that came out in June, we added all the things that are highlighted there in new in red. Windows 2008 support, HPUX 11i version 3, Apple Mac OS. We also introduced some key functions in the SVC, which we didn't get into a lot of depth. We'll do that in the next presentation in 2 weeks. That goes into space-efficient VDIS, where we can now allocate more storage to the host than you have physical storage. They call it thin provisioning or over-allocation. We also allow VDIS mirroring, where I can have a VDIS with pointers to 2 separate sets of MDIS and MDIS groups, so that if I lose one disk controller, the VDIS would stay online because it has a second copy on another disk controller. Get into more depth in that in another session. But we also bumped, as we mentioned, the virtual disk numbers, and we also support some new disk storage subsystems, notably the Pillar Axiom models. So again, this chart used to be very small. Now it's hard to get everything on there. IBM supports lots and lots of different things. The support matrices will show you what all those different levels are, and that's in a couple of charts. So let's go ahead to the next chart, chart 44, and take a look at the roadmap. Version 4.3.1 is coming out November 21st this year. Not a whole lot of new function in it, a couple of enhancements for the way Global Mirror works with the Global Mirror Journal file. We are moving the SIMOM from the master console to the SVC nodes themselves. A few other little things, support type things that we already support pretty much via RPQs with 4.3.0 that we have to do. But the big thing coming out is a new low-cost node. So this is a new model of the SVC node hardware. It's not to replace the current one. It's less performance, but it's also less cost, the idea being focused on the high-volume markets. It's also being bundled with a entry version of the SVC software. It's the same software, same function, same everything. It's just geared towards the smaller shops and some pricing things to help penetrate that particular market. Actually, Chris Saul is doing, I believe, a presentation tomorrow on all that, October 15th. You may want to take a look at that. He'll go into more depth on that as well. If we look at version 5.1 coming in the June timeframe in 2009, lots of new stuff here. We're going to move to a 64-bit kernel, which means the 4F2s will no longer be able to work with that because they only support 32-bit operating system, but all the other nodes will support the 5.1 code. It'll help us get beyond the 2-terabyte limit as well. We'll now be able to have 1-petabyte VDIS or MDIS. We're going to have iSCSI native support using the Ethernet ports on the back of the SVC nodes themselves to allow iSCSI hosts to access VDIS directly. We're going to have some enhancements to our remote copy and a cluster star copy, and that we can have more than two nodes in a partnership. We'll be able to do up to four. We'll also have reverse flash copy, which says now I can take a flash copy target and reverse the direction and copy just those chunks of data that were changed back to the source to put it back to a given point in time. So that's a much quicker way to do it than we do today. And then there's a few other things added in there. And then futures are some more enhancements to remote copy, Metro Global Mirror, kind of like the DS8000 three-site copy, the ability to move VDIS between I.O. groups non-disruptively. We're looking at scalability increases as well as new hardware, a new node to replace the 8G4s that will give you more options for more cache, more HBAs, and things of that nature. That should be coming, again, in 2009 timeframe, probably more towards the end of the year. So again, if you hit the next chart, chart 45, here's some reference material that may help. Some very good Red Books out there. So if you just go to the Red Book site that's listed there, you can do a search on SAN volume controller, and there's several books on best practices, how to do SVC in an OEM environment, and then just the general SVC Red Book that goes into great detail on how SVC works if you want some additional information. The website you really want to get familiar with is that second one from the top, the storage support 2145, that's where all the SVC manuals are, flashes, hints and tips, support matrices, that's even where you download the code if you're upgrading an environment. So much information out there that you'll be using. And then all those publications are available on that website in PDF format. If you go to the next chart, just wanted to again give you a quick idea of some tools that are out there. Earlier, I think I mentioned that if you have a managed disk group and customer wants to add additional MDIS to that MDIS group, SVC currently doesn't automatically restripe all the VDIS across those new MDIS that you put in the MDIS group. This is the script that will let you do that. It provides it's a Perl script that uses just standard SVC CLI commands to move the extents around to redistribute the VDIS extents across all the MDIS and the MDIS groups. So if your customer wants to do that type of thing, this script should be able to allow them to do that. It is not an officially supported product. It's just an example script, but we've had many customers use it successfully to redistribute things. So it shouldn't be any problem. It's not doing anything unnatural, just again, using SVC CLI commands to do that. There's also a script out there for Metro Global Mirror to help automate taking a flash copy of the DR site volumes if you want to do that type of a thing. So you can take a look at that. It's also out there called the Copy Manager. So there's a couple of neat little tools customers may be interested in to help them with some automation and some restriping of extents as needed. If you go to the next chart, chart 47, also wanted to give you an idea because this is very popular with many, many customers today. We're seeing lots of them doing this. They're replacing their older nodes with newer nodes, either because the old nodes are coming off lease or they need more horsepower and they just want to replace them because they're 4 or 5 years old. You can replace SVC nodes non-disruptively with new hardware, and you preserve all your licenses and everything else. You don't have to rezone or do any LUN masking changes because we preserve the worldwide node numbers and port numbers. This is a script that a document I put together to kind of go step by step to help customers avoid shooting themselves in the foot when they try to do this. But it is a procedure. We've had many, many customers do it, lots of feedback from them, which I've been adding to the document to help clarify anything that may be confusing to customers, and we just had real good feedback on it. So if you have any customers that are looking to do node replacements or add nodes to an existing cluster to grow the cluster, this document should be helpful to them. So it's available to IBMers, business partners, and customers can get to it directly through TechDocs. Hit the enter key, chart 48. Let's just take a quick summary then of advantages that the SVC offers, because there's quite a few. Single multipath driver. This is a big thing. Many customers pay lots of money for PowerPath and multipath drivers for HP and HDS. SVC SDD is free. You can almost justify the cost of the SVC in some cases just for the savings they have in multipath drivers. Nothing else that will force EMC to give away PowerPath and kind of kill one of their revenue streams. So that's a big plus. One multipath driver to mess around with. You don't have to manage multiple of them in a heterogeneous environment. Migrations are easy and non-disruptive. If this coming off lease, I just move it from one to the other. Don't have to take any kind of outages. Very easy to do technology refreshes, even of the SVC nodes themselves. I can replace those non-disruptively. Copy services, I buy them one place, I use them there. I don't have to buy it on each subsystem, and I don't have to buy a similar subsystem to do the mirroring between. Today, if you do an EMC SRDF, you got to buy another EMC DMX to do SRDF to. SVC would let you do it to a lower cost, even Clarion box if the customer wanted to do EMC storage only. Smaller licenses. We don't make you buy flash copy, remote copy for the entire box. We just do for the number of terabytes that you need to use. Performance and capacity can be purchased separately. You can buy more nodes for more throughput, more workload required, or if you just need more storage to store archived data or whatever, you can just buy more capacity to put under the SVC. And it also enables easy implementation of tiered storage and the movement between those tiers. So again, I can choose an MDisk group, choose a tier, choose a level of performance that I need. If I don't made a mistake and don't like it, I can always move it back. Again, I can move VDisk non-disruptively to the host, a very key function of the SVC. So with that, let's go to the next chart, chart 49. It's now time for question and answers that you may have. So we're going to open up the lines to let you ask your questions. I hope this was helpful. Again, encourage you to join us for the next four in this five-part series, and we'll go into more depth on all these different things within the SVC. And with that, I'll turn the call back over to our operator.
Thank you. If you do have a question at this time, please press star 1 on your telephone. If you are on speakerphone, please make sure that your mute button is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Once again, that's star 1 if you have a question, and we'll pause for just a moment. And there are no questions in the queue, but as a final reminder, again, that's star 1. We have a question from Ed Chavez.
Hi, Bill. Is there a recommended mode if you're using XIV disk behind the SVC, you know, whether that's the normal striped or image mode?
No, there isn't at this point in time. Some of the testing we've done in Gaithersburg and places, you know, that we've just really done interoperability, you know, does it work? I would say at this point, since the XIV stripes everything anyway at 1 meg stripes all over all the disks in the XIV, probably isn't going to make much difference if you do it as a striped or a sequential. I would guess it's not going to make much difference. As far as I know right now, we're doing them as striped. And unfortunately, we don't have any performance data to say is there one that's better than the other. I'm going to guess it's probably not going to make much difference. Image mode, you don't need to leave them in image mode. I mean, you might bring them under initially, but when you migrate them to the SVC, we would normally not leave them in the image mode. Image mode is basically sequential, so you just do them either as sequential or striped. But I'd just do the striped at this point in time.
Okay, thanks.
Do we have any other questions?
And there are no further questions.
Okay. Well, I do want to say the next next presentation in this Storage Talk series is scheduled for October 28th, same time, same place. So we encourage you to come back for that one. This one I'll get into more depth on SVC version 4.3, specifically how space-efficient VDIS and space-efficient flash copy work, as well as VDIS mirroring. So we'll go into much more depth on that. So again, encourage you to join us for that particular presentation. Are there any other questions?
No further questions.
Further questions? Well, with that, again, we thank you for your time. I hope it was valuable. This will be was recorded and will be out available for your friends to listen to, or if you want to listen to it again. And again, we thank you for your time. And see you in a couple of weeks. Thank you.
And that does conclude today's conference. Thank you for your participation. Have a wonderful day.